Welcome into Preds Insiders on this Monday evening here in Smashville. Ryan Porth here reacting to game one yesterday afternoon up in Edmonton between the Nashville Predators and Arizona Coyotes, where the Coyotes got the better of the Preds in game one by a score of 4-3. And joining me to react to that game and preview game two tomorrow afternoon is Chase McCabe, co-host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, weekdays 10 to 2, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and a part of the Preds Radio Network. Chase, how we doing this evening?
You know, I wish we were on here talking about a win, but other than that, I'm doing all right.
Well, you know, what was so frustrating about that game yesterday is that Friday night, I'm sitting on here making this case of why the exhibition games mattered. Why we saw what we saw Thursday from the Preds against the Stars and the Coyotes against Vegas, how that was going to correlate to something in this series. And then everything that happened on Thursday, it was the complete opposite yesterday.
Right. And, you know, you bring up the exhibition game and how it mattered. I got into a debate with somebody, and I'll say his name because he won't care, Justin Beasley of Channel 4. And he was one of those people that said that it's an exhibition game. You can't read that much into it. And usually I would agree with that, and I even agreed to it to some extent, but given the circumstances that they haven't played games in 4 months, that they only had one exhibition game, I think you had to put a little more into it because that was your only shot at getting a warm-up. And they did look good. So I was hoping that some of that momentum, some of that confidence that they gained with a 2-0 win against a rival in the Dallas Stars, that they would carry over to Arizona. And if you watch the start of game one, you go, okay, all right, first 5-7 minutes or so, you feel good. Bad bounce, Arizona gets a goal, and it snowballs out of control from there.
Right. You know, they did look good for the first 3 or 4 minutes, and like you said, the bad bounce on Oliver Ekman-Larsson's goal, which was one of the craziest goals that you can think of that has been scored on the Preds in their franchise history, leads to a spiral. And that's where I want to start with the reaction to game one, Chase, is that this is not the first time we've seen this from this group. And I continue to be surprised, but maybe I shouldn't, that this continues to happen to this veteran group. I mean, this is one of the oldest teams left in the National Hockey League in this 24-team format. And this group has been together for what seems like forever, and they've been through a lot together. So why does this keep happening? When you look at 2017, Stanley Cup final against the Penguins, anything that went wrong in Pittsburgh, it just snowballed on them. You look at 2018, Winnipeg, game three, they're up 3-0, and then in the first 5 minutes of the second period, everything snowballs, it's tied 3-3, and then they find themselves in a dogfight in that game. Game seven, same thing in the first period. And you know, with game four last year at Dallas, where it was a parade to the penalty box. You know, you were there, Chase. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go down 4-0 before you could blink in game four against the Stars. Then you have another game in Dallas on New Year's Day in the Winter Classic, where once one thing went wrong, it snowballed. One thing went wrong yesterday, and it snowballed. And that is a concern to me.
Oh, it's a huge concern, and I mean, you can even go as far back as Game 7 against the San Jose Sharks, where Shea Weber had probably the worst game of his career.
The last game of his Preds career.
Yeah, it was. The trade happened that summer. And I think with a lot of this, and I've probably been guilty of it too, you have a lot of people that'll go, well, you blame the coach. And so they blamed Peter Laviolette. Well, Peter Laviolette got blamed and blamed and blamed, and then they ended up making a change. Now, some of that I don't think was warranted of putting all of that on him because he's not the one on the ice. But I believe that it's gotten worse here in the last year or so, starting with Dallas and that playoff series last year and even some before that. That's where the inconsistencies just really came in. And what we talked about earlier today on Darren, Donick, and Chase was that they don't have that guy that just you look at him and you immediately know, oh, crap, he's pissed. It's time for us to get our head out of our you-know-whats and get to work. They have leadership, but there are different types of leaders. And I brought up Shea Weber. Shea Weber is a prime example of one of those guys that Shea can walk into a room, not say a word, look at you, and you know exactly what he's saying. He says volumes with just a look. Mike Fisher was the same way. Mike Fisher had that respect and that presence and that command of a locker room or a huddle or however a bench, however you wanna put it. So I think some of that is missing because Roman Yossi's leadership style, I'm not knocking by any means, but it's different. And so I think you need one of those guys. Brian Boyle, to me, was one of those guys, and they didn't bring him back. So I think that the snowball effect has to do with some of that you don't have that guy that can go, hey, snap out of it, let's do this.
Yes, I think you're onto something, but at the same time, some of these examples that we're bringing up, those individuals were on the roster. And,
right.
You know, there was a quote today. Philip Forsberg and Roman Yossi met with the media this afternoon up in Edmonton. And, look, I'm not going to sit here and say it's all doom and gloom. It's one game. This team can bounce back from it. Now, the thing is, you don't want to have this happen again tomorrow, where if you have a bad bounce or a bad break go against you, then it's snowball again. And at some point, you have to get over that. And Philip Forsberg today was asked why this keeps happening to a veteran group, and here was Philip Forsberg's response.
You want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I don't think it's a problem, to be honest. I don't. I'm sure there you can go back and look at situations when it's happened, but just talking about this one, obviously it was a fluky goal, and then we take a penalty right away, a little too aggressive mistake, and we obviously get on the box and kind of put ourselves in a bad spot from there. But then, yeah, obviously there's we don't want to go from 1 to 3 that quick, obviously. And like I said, I definitely don't think it's a problem, and definitely doesn't have anything to do with experience. But at the same time, it's something that we have to do better at that certain moment.
That was Philip Forsberg earlier today. I was surprised, Chase, to hear him say it's not a problem, because it's been a recurring problem.
I wish you could see my face like right now. It's not a problem, huh? Okay. All right. I am I'm disappointed to hear him say that, if I'm just being honest with you, because it is a problem. And I understand that maybe this is one of those problems that you don't want to address in the media, but you have to answer the question, and I think you have to do a better job than saying, I don't think it's a problem, because we have evidence that says that it is.
And maybe in the moment yesterday, they didn't feel like that should be grouped with these other examples that we're discussing. But I honestly think that it should, because this was another big moment for this team, a big stage, a big game for this Nashville Predators team where this happened. I went through all the examples earlier this segment, and you look at the first period, I mean, he mentioned it. Right after that fluky goal, you have Jared Tenorti take a needless penalty, cross-checking a guy.
Dumb penalty.
That did not lead to a goal, but it was shortly thereafter when Christian Dvorak scored on a goal where Roman Yossi and Ryan Ellis looked like scrambled eggs out there, where they didn't know where the puck was. They didn't put a body on really anybody in front of the net. They let Taylor Hall do whatever he wanted on that play. All of a sudden, 2-0 Coyotes. And then Matt Duchene takes a needless penalty minutes later, a holding penalty, which then results in Clayton Keller scoring the power play goal, in which he was left all alone in the slot on a little bit of a broken play where a pass across the crease gets deflected up in the air, but no one put a body on Keller. So all of a sudden, within less than 8 minutes, they're down 3-0. That, to me, is one of the snowball effects that we're talking about. And, yes, I do think that's a problem, that this group together has experienced this way too many times together. And we're only talking about playoff examples. There have been countless examples of this throughout the regular seasons, too, in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you brought up examples, and I guess I did, too, with the San Jose. I think if you go back to probably the Winnipeg series, those playoffs altogether. I mean, we saw signs of some things against Colorado, but that's when things really started, in my opinion, that were really concerning me. And it's just gotten worse as time has gone on. Yes, it's happened in the past, but I feel like the inconsistencies, because I tie all this into it, that it's part of the inconsistencies. Because how many times did we talk about that they were a team that they would get down and they'd be down by a goal or two, but you couldn't count them out And I mean, it's just like my Atlanta Braves right now. They're one of those teams that even if they're down, they may not come back and win, but they're going to finish. And the Predators used to be that way, and now it's just every now and then, sure, you get the old Preds, the good Preds that can battle and they stay in it for 60, and then you get the ones that it just snowballs and they can't recover.
Mm-hmm. Well, the team that season leading up to the playoffs against Winnipeg in 17-18 was the team that kept doing that in the second half of the year. I mean, remember that 15-game point streak where yeah. they would pull points out of their rear end. Late in the third period, they would make comebacks, whether it was at home or on the road. And you're right. I mean, ever since that playoff series, it doesn't feel like we've seen that. But I think this gets back to, you know, we've talked about the spiral. We've talked about the penalties. I'll also throw Philip Forsberg's pass on the power play that was intercepted and taken back for a pick six by Michael Grabner to make it 4-1, shorthanded goal for Grabner and the Coyotes. I mean, these are all mental mistakes that are avoidable. Like for Philip Forsberg on the power play, just get the puck deep. If he had seen Grabner, and I don't know how he would have missed Grabner on that pass. If you had seen Grabner, you're not trying to force that pass across the ice. Just get the puck deep and not try to play with fire against the Coyotes penalty kill that is known for trying to take chances and try to score shorthanded goals.
Yeah, and I'll give him. It was a bad mistake, obviously. It cost them a goal, on a shorthanded goal. But I give him a little bit of hey, he doesn't do that a lot. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes. That is a huge mental error that you have to clean up. So I kind of look at it that way. But that hurt him because they were starting to claw back in. I mean, you were starting to feel like, okay, maybe they're getting a hold of this. And then that happens, and you're like, really? You're on the power play. You have opportunities. By the way, special teams, and I know we're going to talk about this, but special teams definitely looked better than they have than we've seen.
If you take out that one play.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that power play looked as dangerous as it has been in a postseason setting in as long as I can remember. And, you know, the penalty kill came through in the clutch. In periods 2 and 3, when they were having to kill off more penalties, at least the penalty kill kept the game within reach. Mm-hmm. With those kills. Now, you did mention Forsberg, big mistake, and he also said yesterday that it was unacceptable, but he did score 2 goals of his own, including one there in the third period where they were clawing back. You thought if they had tied the game that you were going to feel really good about their chances of eventually winning the game, but they at least clawed back, and you like seeing that. Now, can that surge there in the third period lead to something in game 2? We'll get to that coming up next. What do we expect out of this Preds team in game 2? How confident are we that they will bounce back tomorrow afternoon in Edmonton? That's coming up next. He's Chase McCabe. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Dr. Kelly Rice at kellyerice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard, and OsteoStrong Nashville. Ryan Porth alongside Chase McCabe here this evening with Preds Insiders. Pregame at 12:30, puck drop at 1:30 tomorrow afternoon for the Preds as they take on the Coyotes in game 2 of the NHL qualifiers up in Edmonton. And, Chase, I asked the question before the break. What is our confidence level that the Preds will bounce back in game 2? How would you answer that?
I'm pretty confident in them because they know they have to. And you said it in the tease. How will that third period push carry over? And we've had this debate for years. And one thing that I will always take away from Peter Laviolette and his time here is his thing on momentum. That momentum doesn't necessarily carry over from game to game, but confidence does. And they had to find the confidence in themselves. That's part of the snowball effect that we've talked about. They lose confidence in themselves. They get this mindset of, oh, well, we're out of it now. And John Hines has to try and coach that back into him to help bring them out of that. With all that said, I liked that third period. If they can take that third period and apply it to the entire game, they're going to be fine. Because on paper, they're the better team. They just are. I like Arizona. I think Arizona is Colorado of 2 years ago when the Predators played him.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I do. I think they're close. I think they're maybe a year and a half away from being something. I like what they're doing there. That's my opinion. But okay. I think that the Predators are a better team. They need to act like they are the better team. So I believe that they do that tomorrow. I know we're going to talk goalies in a little bit, but I think they go out there. I believe that they correct some of the mistakes that they made. But the big thing to me is Jofa looked good, minus Forsberg's mistakes, but you got to get help. The other line, that line of Bonino and Grimaldi and Craig Smith, barely saw him yesterday. They got to make a difference because they were the most effective line all year. So they got to step up. Matt Duchene, come on, dude, making a lot of money, making a ton of money, and everybody wanted you for 2 years. Need you to be a part of this thing and step up. So they got to get that secondary scoring going.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I didn't think the third line was as bad as the second line was.
Yeah, and it's not that they were bad. They just weren't used a lot, but, you know, for whatever reason. But I think that they were the most effective all year, so that's got to carry over. They got to pick that back up.
And, you know, for me, when I look – and I agree with you. I feel confident that they bounce back because they usually do in these instances. It's what do they do after they bounce back is usually the big question. So, I do expect the Preds to go out there and have a much better effort tomorrow, a much more disciplined effort. And I think they have to have a much more disciplined effort because that will keep them at 5-on-5. And at 5-on-5 yesterday, the Preds were clearly the better team. I mean, if you take out the fluky goal, which was scored at 5-on-5 for the Coyotes, I mean, the Coyotes did not sustain a ton of pressure at 5-on-5. And the Preds, really, in the last 30 minutes of the game at 5-on-5, were really starting to put a lot of pressure on Darcy Kuemper. And I thought it was important for them not to only play better in the third period yesterday, but to actually score a couple goals on Kuemper. And maybe not have Kuemper feel as confident going into game two and make him feel, you know, maybe a little bit more leaky than he actually is, like he looked on that second goal when Ryan Ellis scored. But to keep it at 5-on-5, you have to stay out of the box. And I asked John Hines earlier today, you know, obviously they want to take less penalties. And as a coach for John Hines, what is the message to the team instead of just saying we need to take less penalties? Here was John Hines' response.
Well, you know, I think it's important that you show what the penalties are. And, you know, just for example, I'm sure every coach does this, but, you know, prior to the game, I mean, you're always trying to educate your team and make sure you're trying to give them the edge. So, you know, even prior to the game, you go in, you talk about the amount of penalties. There was 4.4 penalties taken, I believe, in all the game ones prior to us playing. And, you know, so that's basically 10 power plays a game, special teams. And, you know, then you break down, okay, what were the penalties that were called? You know, there was a ton of interference calls. I think that was the most. And then it was hook, slash, trip, interference. You know, those were all the penalties. And you read the numbers of what these are. And, you know, we need to be aware of it. And it's something that you're aware of it. So we are aware of it. But sometimes it gets to be an emotional game. And, you know, guys – it happens. So we address it today. We show the penalties. How can we, you know, for example, on Tenorti's penalty, it's just a simple thing. Instead of going up to the player and cross check in the back, come stick on puck and you have the same thing. You can go stick on puck and body on body and there's no penalty. So obviously the intensity is high. I think you look at all the games that are around there, there's tons of penalties. We, for sure, if you're talking about Nashville, took some ill-advised ones. Those got to be better. We addressed it this morning. The players understand it, and we'll move forward with it.
That was John Hines earlier this afternoon talking about what he's talking to the team about when it comes to taking less penalties. And I would agree, Chase, that with John Hines when he says that they took some ill-advised penalties. I would say more of their penalties of the seven that they took yesterday, more of them were ill-advised than they weren't. And those are the ones that you have to take out. Look, The delay of game over the glass that Dante Fabbro committed, those are going to happen. But most of the rest of them, you have to cut those out. And we've seen in the NHL league-wide here in the first few days of the playoffs that they are going to call penalties. They are calling
they're calling everything.
A ton of penalties. So you have to stay disciplined. So for me, Chase, I think you have to this Preds team has to stay at 5-on-5 as much as possible and stay out of the box. And when they do get the power plays, capitalize like they did yesterday. I made the bold prediction Friday night on Preds Insiders that this team was going to score at least 3 power play goals in this series because of what we saw from them Thursday. And they scored 2 of them yesterday. And I feel pretty good that this power play is playing with or that they have more confidence on the ice than they have in a long time as a 5-man unit out there as a power play. But you have to stay out of the box. You especially when you're down like they were yesterday, when you're down 3-0 and you're down 4-1, you can't keep spending time shorthanded because that's not going to help you when you're trying to come back.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as much as you want to much credit as you want to give to the penalty kill and how it looked better, you simply cannot take those kind of penalties. So I thought your question to John Hines was a fair one and a good one, and I thought he gave you a good answer. And now it's more than okay. We know we took too many penalties. Now we got to actually see the action. And I go back to my confidence in how they're going to bounce back. I think that's going to be a part of it because you just said it that a lot of times when this happens, they do bounce back. And part of that is if we sit here and we have the conversation of they took too many penalties, they couldn't stay out of the box, you see less penalties in the next game. With all that said, though, going back to our original conversation in the first segment, isn't this also a part of it? Aren't we always bringing this up in a situation like this of they can't stay disciplined, they can't stay out of the box, they're taking bad penalties? And sometimes that's on the official because they're going to call if you breathe on a guy wrong. But that this isn't the case. That yesterday they were putting themselves in the box. So that is a part of the overall issue as well.
I would totally agree. The 17-18 season, they were the most penalized team in the National Hockey League, and that reared its ugly head against the Winnipeg Jets. And then last year, I brought up Game 4 against Dallas earlier in the show. I mean, they committed, it seemed like, 7 penalties in the first 5 minutes. And I'm exaggerating, but the Stars scored 3 power play goals in the first period against the Preds in Game 4, in the first period of Game 4 last year. So, yes, they have to stay disciplined, and they cannot retaliate. I mean, it didn't cost them, but when Ryan Johansson retaliated there at the end of the first period when you're already down 3-0, it's like, dude, come on. Like, why are you retaliating? You can't afford to give up an opportunity on the power play. So they just have to play a lot smarter. And here's another thing, Chase, that we have to see the Preds do a lot more of if they want any chance of making a run in the postseason. And they have to spend more time in the offensive zone in front of the net. That is non-negotiable with the Nashville Predators. And the Ryan Ellis goal is a perfect example. I mean, you had 2 bodies in front of Darcy Kemper. Kemper didn't have a good look at it, and the puck caroms in. A lot of ugly goals are being scored in these first few days of the playoffs. You have to commit yourself to going to the net. And it goes back to something I said last offseason, too, with some of the personnel choices that they made with this team. I didn't know why they didn't go out and replace Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle, 2 individuals that they traded valuable assets for last trade deadline in 2019 to get more bodies in front of the net. They lose both of them in free agency, and they didn't do anything to replace them. So, yes, we want to see them spend more time in front of the net. But who on this roster is going to barge their way to the front of the net? That's the big question for me.
Yeah, because they got pressure on Darcy Kemper. I mean, Darcy Kemper deserves some credit for yesterday, but a lot of it was because the Predators weren't getting the pressure on him until the third period. And I agree with you. I believe, and I don't know if I'll ever get anybody to admit this publicly, and if I don't, fine. It doesn't matter at this point. But one of the biggest mistakes that they made this offseason was not bringing Brian Boyle back. It just
100%.
I believe that is one of the biggest mistakes that they made. They didn't re-sign him, and I know that was on the table and it was discussed. It just never went anywhere. But because of the locker room presence that he brought, because of the fact that he was the most effective player that they acquired last year via trade, and it's because he's a big body that stands in front of the goaltender, and he scored several goals doing that. He helps you on the power play. He helps you anywhere really you need him. He's just one of those guys. And so to your point, I think they really missed that. Wayne Simmonds too, but I thought Brian Boyle was more effective than Simmons was. So
sure.
I believe that that is something that's going to be addressed, but the problem or has to be addressed. But the problem is you can't do that now. And so whoever is on this team that is willing to do that, they're going to have to. And I'm not talking about tiny little Victor Arvidsson. I know Victor Arvidsson is the little engine that could and the Energizer bunny, but that's not what I mean. I mean, somebody's going to have to step up and go be that net front presence. And I think good things will happen if they do that.
And it could be Ryan Johansson. It could be Matt Duchene. It could be Nick Bonino. It could be Austin Watson. I mean, Watson's the biggest guy at forward. I mean, you should see him in front of the net a lot more than you do. And just overall, this team needs to play with a lot more spunk in their game.
I agree.
With more grit, more physicality. Herb Brooks said it in Miracle, and I'll echo his words when he told in the movie, told the team, you don't have enough talent to win on talent alone. You have to play with a lot more physicality. That's what we saw from this 2017 Preds team, where they were physical, even though they didn't have a ton of, you know, physical players. They played physical, and you have to see a lot more out of that from this Preds team, especially in this series against the Arizona Coyotes. Coming up next in Game 2, how do we expect John Hines to approach the goaltending situation with UC Saros and Pecorine? We'll get into that coming up next. He's Chase McCabe. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5, the game streaming on the Game National app.
Any decision on the goalie for tomorrow? I know you were very high on how Saros played, but any shot that you make a move and go to Pekka for Game 2?
Yeah, we're gonna finalize the decision here this afternoon, and then like normally I let the goalies know the night before the game. So, you know, we'll come up on that short order here.
Welcome back into Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Chase McCabe. Chase, that was John Hines earlier this afternoon being asked who his goalie will be for Game 2, and it was not a surprise at all to see or to hear John Hines not give a definitive yes on UC Saros or Pecorine for Game 2. But we both expect UC Saros to get the nod tomorrow in Game 2, even though he gave up 4 goals yesterday. I don't really feel like you can blame the loss on Saros, even though he probably could have played a little better. I feel like UC Saros deserves another shot in Game 2.
Yeah, I do too. I believe that's the direction they're going to go. Not surprised to hear him answer the question the way he did, but I don't know if I necessarily agree with it.
Why?
What I mean by that is I would go ahead and say, no, UC's going to be our guy. And that way you're showing confidence in your goaltender publicly. That's just me. I know that there's a lot of strategy involved and
doesn't want to play his card. Doesn't play his hand.
Yeah. Doesn't want to show his hand. So I understand that. But if it were me, I would just say, hey, no, Juice is our guy. That's what we're going with. He did. It wasn't all on him in Game 1. We're going to put him back out there. With all that said, though, and he would never say what I'm about to say, I think the leash is very short. Because I think if he goes out there and lets a softy in, you're going to see 35 and you're going to see him pretty fast. Because they don't have the time
one softy
to work through it. Maybe two. Maybe it'll take two. But I do think the leash is going to be pretty short. I think it has to be.
I think you're onto something there, because if you fall down 3-0 again in the first period, there is no doubt in my mind that Pecorine is going out there to relieve UC Saros, whether the goals are on Saros or not.
Right. And I was – so yesterday, and we got into this, and Darren and Willie completely disagreed with me, so I'll see what you say. In the heat of the moment, in the middle of the game, when things were snowballing out of control, I did put the tweet out, maybe you need to go ahead and do it. And put Pekka in there. And it had nothing to do with UC Saros. It had absolutely nothing to do with UC Saros. It was more of the mind play of, okay, Superman's on the bench. Fine. You guys aren't helping UC out. We'll put that in there. And that sparks something. That's a, you know, again, it's all psychological at that point of there's the guy that, you know, his 89-game playoff streak has been broken. Here's the guy. Maybe that sparked something. That could have been a heat of the moment thing for me, but I do apply that here, that, you know, if it's a short leash, you do have that card that you can try and play, and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. But I do think there's something with that just because of everything Pecorine has done in the past.
And I know a lot of people on Twitter were clamoring for Pecorine once it became 3-0 or even 4-1.
Because it's safe. Because it to every, and it may not be safe because there's a reason he's not the starter right now. But I think everybody just has that safe feeling of, okay, he's done it so many times in the past, he's going to come save us again.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, I was more surprised that they did not take their time out after 3-0. Now, it didn't cost them because Philip Forsberg scored that goal late in the first period, stopped the bleeding a little bit. I was more surprised that John Hines did not take his time out at 3-0 than I was that he didn't pull Saros for Pecorine, because I see where you're going with that, but at the same time, with a young goaltender making his first ever playoff start, I don't think John Hines wanted to rattle UC Saros' confidence even more by pulling him after a 3-0 lead. And I think all of a sudden you are setting yourself up for a musical chairs act between the pipes for the entire series if you move away from Saros so quickly in game one. And then you have two goalies that don't have confidence if Pecorine goes in there and doesn't do any better. So I was fine with Hines leaving Saros in yesterday, and I'm fine with Hines starting Saros tomorrow if that's the way it goes. And I still say, just like I did last Friday, that if UC Saros plays well tomorrow, I am not starting Pecorine in game three just because it's back-to-back. If UC Saros plays well and you feel like you've gained some momentum, I'm not giving the Arizona Coyotes a break per se by putting Pecorine in there just because you don't feel like UC Saros can do it back-to-back games. I mean, it's not your normal back-to-back.
And I have given you credit everywhere except to with you, because I haven't been on a show with you, but I didn't look at it that way until you sent me a text and you said something. I'm like, you're right, because I'm so accustomed and I'm so trained to, on a back-to-back, usually there's travel involved, that you leave, and you said this is what you said in the text, that you leave it, after the game, you get in at 3 a.m. and all of that. Well, now they're just walking next door to the hotel. So I thought that was a very, very good point by you. And it kind of changed my mindset. Now, one thing that we were debating today, a lot of it depends on the game. And if they go two overtimes and he faces 50 shots, then that changes the conversation a little bit. But I agree. I think if it's a normal game, a routine game, and UC plays well, the Predators win, then why not go back to him in game three?
And I think an important disclaimer that you just put in there was, oh yeah, exactly. The disclaimer of, if the Predators win, if they lose, even if it's say 2-0 or 2-1, and they're down 2-0, and you've got Pecorine in your back pocket and you're John Hines,
yeah,
I think you play that card in game three.
You have to.
At that point, if your season's on the line going into game three, and you've got the face of the franchise for the last decade sitting on the bench, I think you see what he's got in game three and see if the goaltending change can spark something not only within Pecorine but also within your team, and see if he can, pull the team out of that 2-0 hole. But if UC Saros plays well tomorrow and they win, I'm sticking with 74 for game three. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong. I think if everything works out how it's supposed to, and it's a win, and he's not facing a ton of shots, not getting a ton of work, then absolutely. And even if he does, it all depends on how much, because of what we just said, that it's a different type of back-to-back. So I understand. I agree, and we're on the same page there.
Coming up next, we'll go around the NHL, and we'll talk about a game tonight that I think the Preds fans need to keep an eye on for a specific reason. That's coming up next. He's Chase McCabe. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth, Chase McCabe here with you on this Monday evening. Lots of action across the National Hockey League today. Earlier today, Carolina made it 2-0 in their series over the Rangers. Winnipeg tied it up with the Flames. a spirited battle between the Jets and the Flames. 3-2 win for the Jets to, again, tie that series. And staying in the Western Conference, Chase, there's a game tonight that a lot of people are going to keep their eyes on, and that is the Blackhawks and the Oilers in Game 2 after the Blackhawks thoroughly embarrassed the Edmonton Oilers in Game 1. If you thought the first period was bad for the Preds yesterday, the first period was even worse for the Oilers on Saturday. And the Blackhawks were one of two 12 seeds, the Canadiens being the other, who are playing tonight and won Game 1s in their series. And I feel like Preds fans need to root for the team that they never want to root for. And here's why.
Okay, tell me why.
Because if the Preds are fortunate enough to get through Arizona and move on to the official round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, they reseed. And Chicago, being the 12 seed, would bump the Preds up to be the top-seeded qualifier coming out of this best-of-five round. And they would be facing, in turn, the team in the Western Conference that performed the worst in the round robin. And if you can get through Arizona and you can feel good about yourselves, then you would be facing off against a team that finished 4 out of 4 in the round robin in the West. And that's a lot better, or could potentially be a lot better, than facing someone that was 3 out of 4. Especially if that team is perhaps Dallas and they weren't playing well going into the season. Pause. You handled them pretty well last week. If they don't play well in this round robin and they end up being the fourth place team out of the West and get that 4 seed and you get matched up with them because Chicago beat Edmonton, then I think that's an advantage for you instead of facing maybe St. Louis or Vegas, who could end up with the 3 seed.
So let me get this straight. One game in, and you're sitting here on August 3rd trying to figure out the first round opponent for the Predators.
I'm just saying, for
this is what I love about you,
for the potential of a playoff run for the Nashville Predators, even though they are down one zip to the Arizona freaking Coyotes. Yes, I'm sitting here saying that Preds fans should root for the Blackhawks, right? Because then the Preds would be the top-seeded qualifier left out of the West and get the fourth-place round-robin team, as crazy as that might sound.
I feel like we're role-playing here, so I'm going to see if I can do this. Jared, I don't care who we play. I just want to see him win. They just need to win tomorrow. Just tie the series at one. I don't care if Chicago – listen – Chicago is a sexy pick for a lot of people. And
they were about to be a sexy pick for you, but then you didn't have the stones to pick it.
No, I didn't. I went Montreal. I had the stones to pick one of the sexy picks, and I went Montreal, and so far I feel pretty good about that. But
you didn't go all in.
I didn't go all in, and I'm a little upset with myself. But okay. Chicago dominated that game. I feel like Edmonton's going to bounce back. They should. If they don't, then fire everybody. But I believe that they'll probably bounce back, and Pittsburgh most likely will too. But
I have more confidence in Pittsburgh bouncing back tonight than I do Edmonton.
Yeah, I'm just trying to defend my pick that I don't love. That's what I'm trying to do. But yeah, look, good on you for trying to figure all this out. I've already forgotten what you said because I'm just focused on tomorrow.
Okay.
I've enjoyed the playoffs so far. I think that Edmonton and Toronto have done a tremendous job as the hub cities. I love the little nuances that they've put in there with, you know, the cannon for Columbus and or that sound effect and, you know, having everybody's goal horns and all of that. But I'm just now it's like, okay, got to get to work, down 0-1, take care of business starting at 1:30 tomorrow.
Well, I would agree with you, but I'm just saying, as you're watching the game tonight and inevitably fall asleep, just keep that in mind, that if Chicago wins this series, it could end up helping the Preds. That's okay. All I'm saying.
Hey, you know what? I appreciate somebody like you that is always looking ahead. You're always trying to do what's best for the Preds.
Always trying to be a carpenter, thinking two steps ahead.
Help the gold.
All right, you mentioned Game 2. For the Nashville Predators against the Arizona Coyotes. And again, that is tomorrow, puck drop at 1:30 or shortly thereafter. pregame festivities start at 12:30. So some matinee playoff action. It'll be the same time, same channel Wednesday for game three. So let's look ahead to game two a little bit. Chase, do you expect any lineup changes for the Preds tomorrow? And when I say lineup changes, I mean at forward or defense.
I do wonder if Kerbinian Holzer gets a look, if they possibly, you know, Tenorti did not have a good game. And we were praising Tenorti for how he played when he got into the lineup on a regular basis. But I do wonder if the third pairing gets a bit of a shuffle, whether you go with the veteran Hamus, you keep Weber in, or do you keep Tenorti in, give him another shot, maybe put him with Kerbinian Holzer, who he was playing with, you know, at the end of the regular season before the pause. So that's one area I would look at.
All right, let's pause there.
Okay.
Because
haven't we had enough pausing? Come on.
Well, true. But I wonder if a veteran guy like Dan Hamus draws into the lineup over Tenorti. And I know they love Tenorti on the penalty kill, and he's good at killing penalties. But I wonder if the penalty, if you look at the issue that they have with penalties coming out of game one, and one of the more needless penalties was Jared Tenorti, and it did not help the snowball effect in the first period yesterday. I do wonder if adding a veteran guy like Dan Hamus back in there, someone who you can still rely on the penalty kill to an extent, if you put him in there and take Tenorti out. I don't think they'll do it, but I do wonder if that is something that John Hines is thinking about, because as we'll probably address at forward too, you don't have much margin for error now in this series.
Yeah.
Especially if you lose tomorrow, you're looking at having to win three straight to keep your season alive. And I do wonder if a lineup change is in store. Tenorti did not play well in game one at all. And Dan Hamus does have a lot of experience. I wonder if he draws in.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by it. So you would take Tenorti out, put Hamus in, keep Weber?
I might take Tenorti and Weber out.
Well, okay.
As a whole, and put Hamus and Holzer in there and see what they have.
I'm kind of with you there, that maybe you just change the pairing altogether and swap them both out.
Although,
I don't think
here's
they'll
the
do
thing,
that,
though.
But
I don't think they'll do that either, because Hamus and Holzer have zero playing time together.
Right.
Remember, Hamus was hurt at the time that they acquired Holzer. So if Hamus goes in, I think it would be Hamus and Weber.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's one or the other. Like, they either go Hamus and Weber or Tenorti and Holzer.
All right, what about at forward?
At forward, this one is a little bit difficult for me to decide. I'm almost leaning towards taking Watson out. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you take him out because he played 6 minutes. You didn't really need him because of how the game was going, that, you know, you didn't really have – you didn't really have the control that you wanted, so you didn't really have to use a player like that. Colin Blackwell, I know, has had some good moments. Got a little banged up in Dallas, but I would assume he's good to go. So maybe you swap those two out, but I don't know. I mean, you could go. Do you go Trennan? Do you give Yakov Trennan a chance? Put him in the lineup.
I would give Blackwell or Trennan a look and take Watson out, because you bring up the ice time, and I did not notice this until just now. Yes, Watson only had 6 minutes of ice time. He only had 46 seconds of shorthanded ice time.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the big reasons why you would think you would keep Watson in the lineup is the penalty kill. But if you only use him for 46 seconds shorthanded, and you're using four or five other forwards more than Watson on the penalty kill, then why not put Blackwell in there? Blackwell is going to bring more speed. It's evident that in the exhibition game where they had 13 forwards at their disposal, Blackwell was the extra forward. And then yesterday during warmups, Blackwell was out there during pregame skate. So I would not be surprised to see Blackwell draw in for Watson, bring more speed to that line alongside Callie Yarncroak and Colton Sissons. I would like to see at some point Yakov trying to get a shot in the playoffs.
So would I.
I think the first man up outside of the 12 forwards right now, when you think of other forwards, I think is Colin Blackwell.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So I think talking this out, I would make a change there. I'd sit Watson and put probably Blackwell in. But I agree. I'd love to find a spot for Yakov Trenin at some point. I just don't know where. I mean, it would have to be, I guess, that spot between those three guys. But
sure,
I could see that being a change. And, you know, honestly, now that I've kind of been sitting here and thinking about it, I do think they make a change on the third pairing. I do. I do think they swap somebody out.
I mean, if you take Tenorti and Watson out and put Hamuse and Blackwell in, you're not getting slower.
No.
And Arizona's a quick team. So I wouldn't be surprised to see John Hines, even after one game, make some changes to the depth of the lineup. All right, let's make some predictions, Chase, before we get out of here.
Okay.
What? Look into your crystal ball. What do you see for game two?
What I see for game two is a much more focused team, because what I think that John Hines has done a good job of is now he has the pulse of this club. And while he hasn't fixed all the problems by any means, I believe that he knows, he has now learned how to get to them and to get them focused and ready to go after a situation like we saw on Sunday. It wasn't a good start to this, but they can bounce back from it now by coming out, be ready to go. You got to get a fast start. I mean, I gave the stat yesterday of how many wins. I think it was like 24 wins. I don't have it right in front of me, but they have only 8 wins when they don't score first. So they got to get a fast start and get up on Arizona earlier to control the pace of this game. But I do believe that they do it. I think UC Saros is in net. I think he has a solid game. Preds win game two and tie the series up at 1.
I think they'll win 3-2 tomorrow. 3-2.
I'll say 3-1.
3-1? All right. I'll say 3-2. I think there will still be some hairy moments there tomorrow where you're thinking, is this team actually going to tie up this series? But I think they get it done. UC Saros plays well enough that he then gets the start again in game three.
For those of you that might be interested, the Predators are a minus 130 favorite.
Ah, look at you with the Vegas odds.
Plus 110 for Arizona. So, you know, they're, I wouldn't say a heavy favorite by any means, but definitely a favorite.
Okay, all right. Chase McCabe, co-host of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Weekdays 10 to 2. Chase, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me, my man.
For Chase McCabe, I am Ryan Porth. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann and company. And don't forget, tomorrow, pregame coverage starting at 12:30, puck drop at 1:30 for game two of the Preds versus Coyotes. And then after the postgame show is over tomorrow, Jared Stillman will be on the air taking your live reaction and calls after game two, and we'll also be live on Facebook with Chase McCabe and company. So lots of coverage tomorrow. Stay tuned. Slapshot Radio coming up next right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game.